Today, we're talking about leadership. We're in 1 Peter, and some of you in the room might think, well, I'm not a leader, or you don't want me leading anything, or if you knew me, you wouldn't, trust me with something. But the reality is, God has entrusted all of us with some things, and probably God has entrusted you even with some people. For your parent, obviously he's entrusted you with kids. No matter what your relationship is today with your kids, there's some sort of opportunity that God's given you. But I have a feeling whether you're sponsoring some guys or you're a parent or you lead something here at church or you lead some folks at work, someone has been entrusted to you. And today we're going to be talking about this charge, about what to do with what God's entrusted us with. And before we get to the passage, there's this analogy that comes up for leaders and specifically for God as the ultimate leader. It comes up a lot in the Old Testament and the New Testament, but other religions in the world doesn't come up in their books, books that are outside of the Bible, this concept of this image for a leader. So I want us to look at that first. So if we go to this first slide, it's of a flock or group of sheep and their shepherd. And that's an analogy that God uses for himself with his people, that Jesus uses for himself, that he is the good shepherd. And it's an interesting, if you're thinking about all the different ways that you could talk about a leader, it's a very humble analogy for God to use. It's this image of someone who is right there next to the group that he's leading. When you see, it looks like a cold place, wherever this is taken at. And just like the sheep look super, big and woolly, I'm sure that shepherd is wearing a lot of clothes. Like, he's experiencing the same cold that they're experiencing. Looks super rocky and uncomfortable. Wherever those sheep sleep, my guess is the shepherd is sleeping close and in the similar conditions to how they're sleeping. There's this idea that a shepherd leads first with his presence. Like, to be a shepherd, you have to be right there with the sheep. Today, I'm showing up and talking to you guys, for about 15 minutes or something. But that's not the leadership that's displayed right here. It's this leadership of life lived with those you're leading and going right in front of them as the shepherd is. So when we think about who God is, who Jesus is as a leader, Jesus is this sort of leader that lays down his life for us and shares his life intimately with us. So we're going to be in 1 Peter chapter 5, starting in verse 1 in this slide. Peter's writing here, and he says, "To the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder." So right off the bat, I want to say that Peter, who is one of Jesus' most inner circle, Peter was given that name by Jesus. It means rock. And Jesus said, "I'm going to build my church on you." Of anybody that could feel like I'm better than the people around me or people need to follow me just because of who I am, it would probably be Peter, would be right up there. But he makes this very humble appeal. He's an older guy at this point, and he's talking to the older guys in this Christian community, and he says, "I'm an elder just like you." He gets like this idea of, "I'm in the same spot that you are." He comes in this humble way. We see that in Peter. And then he also says, "And as a witness of Christ's suffering, who also will share in the glory to be revealed." So Peter's coming with humility, and he's already pointing what Jesus has done for us and what Jesus is going to do for us. Is how he prompts this advice on leadership. So if you're thinking about how can I be a better leader, Peter's example is to be humble, and to start with what has Jesus done for you and what is your hope in Jesus. But here's the meat of his advice, starts in verse 2. It says, "Be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care, watching over them." So he's going to then lay out a few different ways to be a good shepherd, but that's the idea that Peter gives us, is that if you want to be a good leader in Jesus' kingdom, then you need to be a good shepherd. You need to watch over and care for the people that God's put in your life. Don't necessarily need to show up and command them or have all the right answers. It's this idea of getting right there with them, protecting them and fostering them, taking care of them. For specific stuff, he says, not because you must, but because you're willing, as God wants you to be. And I've been thinking about that phrase, not because you must, quite a bit, because at first it made me think about this idea of duty. And we have some amazing volunteers here at Maywood. There's a few people that come super crisp in my mind. I've had enough conversations with them to know that specifically they have somebody who went before them at Maywood who they just have this incredible respect for. And so much of the work that they do day in and day out is trying to live up to that baton that was handed off to them. And it's this like sense of duty that they carry out this really hard work. And at first when I was reading this, I was like, is that the wrong motivation? But the reality is that idea of someone has done something great for me, and out of love for that past person, I want to carry this baton well. I don't think that's what he's talking about here with must. I think that is a good motivation. What I think he's talking about here with because you must is this idea that I've seen other people that serve out of guilt. There's some sort of, I have to do this because I'm not a horrible person or something. And I mean, every parent has those moments where like the only reason they're driving the kid or whatever is because they're like, because I have to, you know, or like, because I'm the parent and I have to do this or something. There's these moments, I'm just doing it out of duty, just doing it because I'm supposed to. And those are bad moments of leadership. Like if that's where you're at, you're not leading the right way. What he says is, God wants you to be willing. Sometimes we struggle a lot to figure out what does God want me to do? What God's will for my life? God wants you to be the type of person that you're willingly wanting to engage with the people that he's entrusted to you. Some of us are so spread out thin that we can't actually come willingly to the people that we've been entrusted with because we're so tired and we're so in a rush to get to the next crisis and we're just doing it out of a must rather than out of this is what I want to do. And so if you're in a spot today and you're like, the people that God has put in my life that I have a chance to impact, I'm not showing up wanting to help them. I'm not showing up wanting to be involved in their life. You need to get that right with God. Even to the point of it's okay to maybe do half as much as you're doing right now, but do it with this desire to actually do it, this willingness to do it. Because God doesn't want you so spread thin that you're showing up to stuff because you have to be there, that you're showing up for people because you have to. Like that's outside of his will. So if you're outside of his will, then you got to talk to him about like, how do I get back? And it might even be like getting rid of some of those responsibilities, okay? The second half of verse 2, it says, not pursuing dishonest gain, but eager to serve. Dishonest, I think, is an important word in that statement. Sometimes people show up as a leader, and they won't admit out loud what they're really trying to get out of being a leader. Maybe they haven't even admitted it to themselves, but maybe they're leading to try to prop up some low self-esteem or try to get some sort of compliment or get someone else to be dependent on them. And it makes for unhealthy things. You start to see like the impact they're having doesn't fit the way they talk about what they're trying to do. You know, they complain about the people they're with or the people they're leading. They complain about their kids or their group or whatever. And one question to ask is like, why are you leading that group or that person? Have you been honest? And is there some sort of greed motivation instead of a desire to feed those people or help those people? Okay? So if you like rhymes, you know, it's not about greed, it's about feed, you can stick with that. I didn't love that, to be honest. I don't even know if First Service heard it. I thought about it and thought like, eh. But certainly like, eager to serve. When you lead other people, it's supposed to be about helping them. We've all had bosses who weren't willing to do the sort of stuff that they told us to do, that didn't actually care about the things that they told us to care about, that they weren't actually about helping us get the job done. They were more like kings or queens wanting us to serve them, right? We've all had those bosses. We've all resented those bosses, right? You know, and it's pretty rare that you run into somebody that has real power over you and is using it to serve you. Doesn't, not using it to enable you, not using it just to make you happy, but using it to serve you. We've either seen or at least heard about, though, there's certain parents or certain good leaders out there who they do things to help that other person come become all there can be, right? They serve the person that they're leading. And that's Christ-like leadership. That's being a good shepherd. Last piece of advice is in the next verse, not lording it over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. We've been entrusted with people in our life. And again, do we use it to be the boss, or do we use it to be an example? You can't take people where you are not at. It's a hard lesson if you're the type of person that other people listen to. Because we all see other people's problems. And sometimes we're even right about other people's problems. I mean, sometimes we're just off. And it's a real temptation that I know very well to try to see a problem in somebody, and I know it's their real problem, and then I try to tell them how to fix it. And sometimes I don't have that problem fixed myself, and I cannot lead somebody in an area that I'm not healthy in. Just within earlier this month, I don't know exactly when, talking to another leader, they were obviously exhausted and tired and spread too thin. And I tried to teach them about Sabbath and taking a break because so clearly like they needed it. But I'm struggling to figure out Sabbath for myself and what does rest really look like, and I'm struggling in the same way. And it clicked as I was praying about it, which I should have done before I talked so much. I can't take that person somewhere that I'm not already at. So the nice thing about all of us at Maywood, myself included, is we have multiple problems, you know? So there was still something for me to help this person with because there was some other area that I did have a strong health in and I could help them in that way. And when you're trying to figure out how to help the people that you have some influence on, the guy that sleeps, you know, over you at Maple House or the kids in your house or the guy that you sponsor or the guy at work, you don't have to fix all their problems. You need to think about, like, Jesus, what have you put in me that's good that I have a handle on that I can help this other person? It might not even be their biggest problem, but it's the sort of stuff Jesus wants you working on people with. You need to be an example. And one other thing about being an example, a really silly analogy, or not analogy, I guess just a story. People I've lived with as an adult, like roommates and then now Chrissy, there's this thing that will come up after we've been living in the same place for a while that's weird. I never expected it, but it's a pattern I've seen, and Chrissy is also in the same pattern. She doesn't know what I'm going to talk about. But there's this weird guilt that comes on people that live with me that they will express. I never bring it up. They just suddenly, it'll come out like this guilt that they don't floss enough. Most people I live with, they come up with that, and I never talk about flossing, I don't think. I had a cavity when I was like 17 in between two teeth, and this dentist had to drill through a bunch of good tooth to get to the filling, and he gave me this little lecture, like dentists do, you know, about like, you need to floss, because this is what happens when you don't floss. But for me, I just took it. I was just like, that's true. I need to floss every day. And then pretty much, like even if I'm camping or whatever, like I'm out there camping with, at the very last thing I do, you know, after the s'mores stuff is like floss. So it apparently like weighs on people that live with me, like this little drip on like a rock type of thing. It just like wears them down. I never bring it up, but they all wind up facing that of like, I guess I don't floss enough because I've lived with Jake now, which is, I don't even care that much about flossing. You know, I mean, I want Chrissy you know, I want her to be healthy, but I've never thought like, oh man, I need to convince Chrissy to start flossing more. But this is the sort of stuff we all do. We all lead the people that spend a lot of time with us. We lead them somewhere. And so if you are a flosser, you're going to lead people to that. They're going to have an encounter with that. So whatever's really inside of you, if you spend significant time with people, it's going to influence them. And this has only come up with people that have lived with me, with roommates and then Chrissy. Nobody else has ever told me, like, Jake, I think I need to start flossing more. I've never had anyone ever tell me that, except for people that live with me, right? So you start to see this, like the way Jesus wants us to lead is not show up and have all the answers and be with someone for 10 minutes and then move on to the next person. The people he has really entrusted you with, he wants you so close to them that your example leads them. Sheep follow a shepherd because they're so close to him. They know his voice, and he's right there all the time, and so they go where he goes. You can't make a huge impact without a big time investment, the way that Jesus is talking about here. Jesus himself relocated to live with the disciples and spend all of his time with them to make the impact. He literally comes inside of us. We had somebody pray and receive Christ at the end of last service. Jesus is inside of that person now. Jesus doesn't try to work on us from the outside in 5-minute increments. He gets inside of us and lives life with us. So one more picture and we'll get to our last verse. If you got bored along the way and you lost it, what is the leader? They're willing, they serve, and they're an example. So then we've got this image here of that we can go to next, Courtney. I was thinking a lot about this passage in Shepherd and where did this come from in Peter. And if you go back to John chapter 21, Peter's made a mess of things. He's denied Jesus. Jesus makes breakfast like as the sun is coming up over a fire. And he has breakfast with Peter and some of their close friends. And then he goes on a walk with Peter, just Jesus and Peter having a conversation. And in that conversation, Jesus has this question that I think drives everything that Peter's talking about decades later. And Jesus' question, we won't get into all the nuance. There's a lot of nuance there. But the basic question is, do you love me? Jesus sets Peter up to be this awesome leader. And at the core of that, at the foundation, what Jesus cares about, if you're going to be a leader, is do you love me? It's easy when other people start depending on us to lose sight of our relationship with Jesus or to make it second to all the fires we have to put out. But you will not be the best parent you can be. You will not be the best sponsor you can be. You will not be the best coworker you can be if you do not love Jesus. And it's even okay to just stop and say, I need Jesus more than I need to succeed at whatever else right now. Right? To even say things like, with the kids, we've got 2 3-year-old toddlers, and sometimes when I'm with them by myself, I get overwhelmed, and I wish like a perfect dad would be way more patient and loving. And that's what I want to be. That's the type of leader I want to be. It's this like incredibly patient, loving person. But the reality is I'm not always that. So what I've started doing recently is Sequoia will ask me things like, Dad, Daddy, are you happy right now? And it's because she can tell like I'm not happy right now. But what I've started doing is when I know I'm getting really frustrated, I started stopping and saying, that I need to pray, that Dad needs to pray. And then I'll pray a prayer with them. They're sometimes like going off the wall and I'm like holding their hands so they can't like hurt themselves while I pray. And I'm praying while they're singing or screaming or whatever. But I pray stuff like, Jesus, help me to be patient and to be a good dad. And they hear that. And so the leader that I want to be, I can't always be. But I believe, like, that Jesus wants to use even that. Like, wants to use those moments to teach Samuel and Sequoia that when you're frustrated, like, you go to Jesus and you ask him for help. So, like, I can't teach them how to be a perfect person because I'm not a perfect person, but they're not perfect either. Like, I know that full well, that they're not perfect either. So I get to be an example of, like, the goodness that I have is that I can go to Jesus when I can't handle stuff. And so you can give that same thing to people. You can give the goodness that Jesus has given you. So this last verse we're going to read. Peter says this statement about Jesus. It's the only time this particular phrase gets put to Jesus. It says, when the chief shepherd appears, this idea that Jesus is the head, but that we also could be shepherds on his team. It says, when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that will never fade away. And so he started with a humble appeal to these leaders to say, I've seen what Jesus did for me and have my hope in Jesus. Here's some advice that's all rooted in what Jesus put in me, because Jesus told Peter, if you love me, feed my sheep. He told him all this, like, shepherding stuff. But then he ends it with, we're on Jesus's team. He ends it with this idea of our hope in Jesus. So to be the leader that God wants you to be, it's all rooted, it's all sandwiched in your connection with Jesus. So don't try to find the solution to be the better whatever if you don't feel close to Jesus right now. Because you need to serve other people out of the overflow of whatever God is doing inside of you. God has to fill you up, Jesus has to fill you up, and then you want to give people what Jesus has given you. It's okay if they need other things and you don't have it. You are just responsible to give them the things that you've received from Jesus.